Israel in the Old Testament. His name is escaping me at the moment, but he got old and he was diseased in his feet. And the Lord got angry with him because he turned to doctors for his cure to the exclusion of not turning to Jehovah. And so he didn't get better. But Melissa has turned to Jehovah. And so we believe that God will answer all prayers. We totally believe that her son's going to be fine shortly. Or if not, then something even better will result from it. But we're sure that he'll be healed shortly. All right, so I think it was Asa, right? 1 Corinthians chapter 11 through 14, talking to us about worship in the assembly, worship together as the church. Can you worship on your own? Of course, and must worship on your own, but you also must worship in the church. God told his Christians, once he converted them, get together in groups, local congregations, and worship. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, he told us how to worship with authority on our heads, women with one kind of authority on their heads, and men with another kind of authority on their heads. And then he told us about the Lord's Supper and how that should be taken. Now in 1 Corinthians chapters 12, 13, and 14, it's talking to us about spiritual gifts. Does anybody here have the spiritual gifts that it talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 12? No. So what then would we be taking out of this? If he's telling them, here is how you use your talents in the church setting, well, what are we talking about? We're talking about how do you use your talents in a church setting, and that is to benefit one another. 1 Corinthians chapter, and then he used a beautiful illustration of the body. If the ear says, because I'm not the eye, I'm not of the body, does that make it not of the body? If the ear is going to say, I'm not part of Jeff's body, I don't want to be part of it anymore, does that statement change the fact that it's sending sounds to what little brain I have? That ear is still part of the body. Same with us. Anybody here says, you know what, I'm a Christian, but I really don't want to be a functioning member of the church at Sumner. That doesn't change anything in God's eyes as far as what he wants. So, verse 18, but now God has set the members, every one of them in the body, as it has pleased him. He makes a choice. Now, we used a football illustration here. God uses a physical illustration here. There's a reason for that. The Seahawks' best football player this Sunday is Richard Sherman. Other people have different opinions, but that's the correct answer. He's actually their best football player. And when he was in college, you know, he wasn't a defensive back. When he was in college, he started as a wide receiver. He wanted to catch the ball. But then a college coach told him, you know, you're pretty good at catching the ball, but you would be great at stopping people from catching the ball. You're over on the other side of the line of scrimmage. And they made him a defensive back. And now here he is standing up on TV talking about how great he is because he's playing that role. Who made the choice? Not him. His coach made that decision. Now, why didn't God use a football illustration in 1 Corinthians chapter 12?
Wasn't around then.
What was around then? Physical bodies. You notice that throughout the scriptures, especially in Jesus' parables, the scriptures have this ability to use illustrations that work for people on seven different continents in 20 different centuries, and they have this universal appeal. And so the same thing here, that the Church of Jesus Christ at Sumner or West Campus or at Renton or at Kent, it functions like a body. And once we start seeing ourselves as having one design, God wants worship accomplished on Sunday. He wants the gospel sent out and people coming to the Lord out of this place. And he wants people learning and being edified and studying their the Bible. We are the body and Christ is the head. If we can start thinking of it that way, that we're members of a team with an objective and we all win if that objective is met, then we're looking at it God's way. Let's just read verses 19 through 26 here. We're almost done with chapter 12 and about to get into chapter 13. So, could we have somebody read 19 through 26? Ed, would you mind, please?
And they were all members, where were the body? But now there are many members, but yet one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of thee, nor the hand again to the head, to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon these bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. For our comely parts have no need, but God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to the part which lacked.
Okay. All the way through 26, if you don't mind.
That there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it.
Now we have defined the nine different miraculous spiritual gifts here, but the point of this chapter is not particularly just for us to understand what those nine gifts are. He's correcting a misuse of it. So, I don't know. Let's suppose that Brother Franklin gets up this Sunday morning and he does a lesson. He says, I'm going to try something new. Instead of preaching this, I'm going to Twitter everybody. So take out your little devices and I'm going to send you some Twitters and we're going to learn the Bible that way. Or I'm going to text you. And he gives us four or five texts or four or five Twitters. And then he sits down. And to correct that misuse of the pulpit, Spawn gets up and he says, now let us discuss what Twitter is for. Would he really be wanting us to know what Twitter is for? Or would he be trying to say, you know, you don't preach by Twitter? That's the same kind of thing. Twittering and texting is a way to convey information to somebody who doesn't want to pay you any more attention than one glance. That's what Twitter and texting is for. Preaching is something different. That's for somebody who wants to pay you enough attention to meditate on the Almighty. That's what sermons are for, and that's why the two don't match. And the same thing here, the use of tongues and miraculous gifts to show off doesn't make any sense. Can you even conceive of a situation where Dan Olson was given the gift of tongues and Bill Downey Sr. was given the gift of interpretation of tongues and Dave Bowling was given the gift of miraculous knowledge and they were showing off and flaunting and rubbing it in one another's noses? Why would God even give people gifts to somebody who would do that? Can you explain that? That's exactly the situation, is you've got the Corinthians here, and they've got at least nine tremendous spiritual gifts, and they're all going, nah, nah, I can speak in tongues, and you can't. Guess that makes me God's favorite. If you were God, would you give gifts to somebody? How did this happen, Jenny? So it can even be instructive to watch somebody leading the service in an arrogant way, because we learn not to do it that way. It's like an expression I once heard, that some folks' function in life is to serve as a negative example for everybody else. Go ahead, Bill.
It's not like it's unique that God gives those people these gifts and misuse them, because every gift that God gives us is seen by being misused.
Mm-hmm.
Money, we misuse that. Sex, we misuse that a lot. All the good things in life that God gives us as gifts, some way, somehow, we usually turn it around, you know, and sometimes at least misuse it. So this is no exception. That they would do the same thing with this category of miraculous.
Perfect. God gives his gifts abundantly and in great grace to everybody, and it seems like 98% of the time we all misuse everything. So, but still, wouldn't you expect that a prophet would be selected for his devotion to the Lord and his sincerity? Mike, what do you think?
Well, the word gift is an expression of magnanimity. It's something that someone does out of the abundance of what they have to supply someone else. And gifts are not always given with the consciousness of what this person is going to do with that gift. We give gifts many times in life where the person abuses and wastes that gift, and that's just the nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that God was giving these things as gifts reflects the fact that there was an insufficiency of revelation at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
The gift is not something that one wants to continue to receive throughout his life. You know, at some point, an individual will start to resent the gift and say, you know, I want to be able to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not out of pride, but that's out of a sense of maturity. And so these things, by the very word that's used here, gift, indicates it's not a permanent thing. You don't live off gifts. God was giving gifts until there was a sufficiency of revelation whereby people could do these things for themselves through that revelation.
Very good. Ed?
You know, this body of people in Corinth, you know, when we cover especially chapter 6, you know, how messed up. We would call this kind of a dysfunctional kind of congregation, and Paul chastised them, and then they turned things around. And just by in their nature, their personalities, you know, you can see that, I mean, they were taking each other to court, they were, you know, there was a lot of upsmanship and one-upsmanship things going on there. And so then when these gifts, we got to remember what's the purpose of the gifts was to confirm the word and the message
messenger and all that, but you can just see the personality of the people in Corinth and of this congregation. I think also, I wanted to just digress a little bit, is I've been to, one thing that impressed me about the Lord's church when I was looking, I was studying the Bible and I had an open heart, and I was looking for where's God's real people, where's the real church. And one thing that I didn't like to see, I've never seen it in the Lord's church, is if you go to, and I don't want to pick on denominations, but if you go to someplace and they have these chairs up in the back of the podium there, and they're like these, you know, a king's chair, you know, they're really like you go to
Chief
the
seats.
Spaghetti factory or something, and the old spaghetti, and you got these big old chairs, you know what I'm talking about. They're Hurricane big chairs. And it's like, oh, the deacons sit in that chair, and the choir master sits in that, you know, and the assistant to the assistants, and it's like, so these people are elevated above everybody else sitting in this pew here. They're in this, they're in the worship in this comfy chair, and they're higher than everybody else, like an exalting kind of thing. And what difference is that? You know, I mean, in my eyes, they're getting that person. Are they more prominent? Are they more important than me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're all to be, you know, we're to worship all together, and we're all to be subject to one another. So I think it's interesting that can happen today too.
Mm-hmm. The Lord chastised the Pharisees because they loved the chief seats, and that's exactly what it's talking about. You have a particular status, and you achieve it in the synagogue, and then on Saturdays, you get to take your higher status. And the Lord's church, I think, does such a good job of staying away from that. We're just all Christians here. We all feel like you could just as easily be in a living room tonight, and anybody could be leading the study. We're raised in that. Sometimes all you have to do is go down to the next denomination to be shocked by how much it is about status, or here's the person who's going to do the solo song, or whatever it might be, and you're going, what's this all about? And so the Corinthians had to learn that. They hadn't learned it yet. Terry?
You know,
they did.
It's human nature. You have chosen to think. And you see, like Ezekiel warned, to do this.
That's right. That's right. Is it conceivable that a preacher in the church nowadays could be egoed out? Even though God gave him the gift? Don't answer that question. You know, even though God took a particular guy and he gave him the ability to preach or the ability to be an elder or the ability to be a song leader or whatever, have you ever seen a guy who kind of went sideways in his career and all of a sudden his attitude was all weird? I mean, is it possible that you could take the very best lesson ever done on paper, whatever your favorite lesson was, and I could get up this Sunday morning and read that exact lesson, scripture for scripture, everything in it absolutely perfect, and yet do it with an attitude that was horrible? Is that possible? Whenever God gives a gift, he doesn't then take away that person's free moral agency the rest of his life. If he gives, I don't know, Joel the gift of at age 25 of preaching, that doesn't mean God will decide for Joel at age 45 whether he's going to be a humble man. God gave these Corinthians their spiritual gifts, and then those people remained with the decision of what they were going to do with their lives. And some of them became all egoed out about it, and some of them did not. So does that make sense? I mean, so you see God has put a particular man in the pulpit, or he's put a particular woman leading a Bible class or whatever. If that person then makes the decision to become lustful or egoed out or whatever, hey, we remain all in the same boat trying to figure out life together, and some people botch that. Dave?
Exactly how some are going to start. The fellow that caused the trouble, preaching over from Joe at that time, good speaker. He knew his Bible as far as being able to quote scripture and so forth, but he went sideways, and the way he handled the scriptures and the way he handled dealing with people was totally wrong. And so some of us left and came over and started to work here.
Mm-hmm.
Every Sunday, we would find a stack of papers where he was writing articles about every preacher around the area. I remember, and basically tear them down, and just caused a lot of trouble for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was quite a challenge getting past that, getting people not to let that get to them, so that they lose their faith, you know, and forget about the church. And so it was quite a job getting started, and starting with three families, see where we are today. And just because of the various ones over the years, we've been busy.
You and two other families, huh? Jenny, do you want to read a scripture for us? Do you have a New Testament with you there? Philippians chapter 1, 12 through 18 makes Jenny's point, going beyond the fact that even if you're given a gift and you can go sideways with it, even if you do, God can still make some good things out of a person who has a terrible attitude because they're still getting a job done. Sometimes they can even be a negative lesson for other people. Andrew, did you have a remark? In a minute.
Just a thought. You know, Paul, God invested quite a bit in Paul. He raised the dead through Paul's hand, you know, did massive healings through Paul's hand, and he kind of made it so that Paul would get the big head by giving him a thorn in his
butt. He did. That apparently made him ugly, Galatians 4.
Made him ugly.
Repulsive.
Almost blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he apparently put a governor on Paul, right?
Governor is a great way to put it. Yeah. No punchlines to that. Mike, did you have a comment or a question?
If I did, that should happen.
Good. Okay, Jenny, Philippians chapter 1, 12 through 18. Right. Philippians 1. Here is where Paul is saying, Paul is in prison here, last couple of years of his life, and you know what? There are a bunch of preachers out there who are redoubling their efforts to baptize people so they can exceed Paul. It's almost like a college top 20 poll or something where they want to climb past Paul in the standings. And believe it or not, they're thinking, well, he's in jail. He can't add to his baptism total, whereas we can add to their baptism total. We'll be out there baptizing people and being thanked for it while Paul's in their suffering. That's how lousy their attitude was. Now, if that sounds impossible to you, you should hear some stories about the Philippines. We support two really great men, and Philip, who came in, is obviously a very quality man. We're able to send $2,000 over here this last time, as a result of people being inspired by that lesson and different things. But they've had difficulties over there where Filipino preachers were keeping files on one another to gossip about one another, to slander one another, so they could keep one another from getting support over here so they could get the support. And it was, you know, this big, huge fur flying and everything for everybody to destroy one another so they could get American funds. Here's what Paul says about that. Philippians chapter 1, 12 through 18. And that's so you got somebody over there in the valley, and you know the guy's a hypocrite. You know, it's almost obvious he's not even going to heaven, but he baptized three people last week, and his, you know, where he's working is growing. And Paul's, you know what? I'm glad for those new converts. You know, that guy will be judged. He'll get his for the better or for the worse. So he's rejoicing in the gospel, and that's something. Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 27 through 31 wraps up this chapter. Mike, were you going to read?
Sure.
Now you are the body of Christ and members individually, and God has appointed these in the church, first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, administrations, varieties of tongues. Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles? Do all have gifts of healing? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? But earnestly desire the best gifts, and yet I show you a more excellent way.
All right, so the active phrase here is the very first one here where he says God has set some. The whole point of chapter 12 is that God has been the one who made this decision here. One time I was just chatting with a guy at work in a secular work job, and he was arguing that God had designed things wrong in the body. Okay, now, his idea, he was interested in athleticism, and he said God should have designed our lungs to hold about two or three times as much oxygen so we could run about two or three times as fast and two or three times as far, and he made a mistake. How would you answer that? Just to illustrate this point of verse 28. Okay, that makes sense, doesn't it? That anything you increase has a calorie cost and a weight cost, and are there some people who don't need to run 30 miles an hour? And Pat, you had an answer for us?
An excess of oxygen often leads to an excess of aging. The more oxygen your body pumps through, the faster you burn through.
That's an interesting point. We don't even have to answer this correctly. We're just thinking about whether God should be in charge is all we're thinking about here. But right, I mean, supposing that it might very easily be that you start pumping twice as much oxygen into Pat's blood, and you might find a lot of things go haywire, especially over a period of time. So there's many things we don't understand. Anything that you want twice as much lung capacity, that's going to come out of some other system, or it's going to cost you that much more food or something. You might as well ask, why is my liver not on the outside of my body? Why is my nose not on the top of my head where there's lots of clearance for it as far as hair these days? And why don't I have four ears? And the point is, God has set the human body. It's fearfully and wonderfully made, isn't it? A couple of years ago, we even did that study of the golden rule, how if, I don't even remember how that works, that this ratio right here is much larger than this, as this entire one is, then here it's a 1.618 ratio, I think. And nature is just loaded with it. I mean, you can find literally hundreds of geometrically golden designs in the human body, like the distance between the nose and the eyes, and the ratio between the shoulders and the waist, and the size of the hand to the fore. If that hand were twice as big, would that not be kind of odd? We are aesthetically perfectly made to decimal points. The point is, God did a... Do you agree that God did quite a job designing the body? That's what he's getting at here. And so if you can believe that, what else did God do a good job designing? The Church of Christ at Sumner. That's his point. Not the church universal. He's saying the church that God designed the Corinthian church just right. He put the right people with the right gifts. He put the right people who are the right teachers. Now, is it possible that human beings put the wrong guy in as deacon or the wrong guy as elder? Yes, and those things also have their own balances. We're not using popularity contest to elect deacons. We're using what to elect deacons? We're using 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 to elect deacons. We're a lot better off using God's system than we would if we used any other system. So accept it. That's his point in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 28. Be thankful for this wonderful body that God has done in the church. Okay, so you might not realize it, but Andrew and Bill are unselfish guys. I mean, I can say without reservation, they have your best interests at heart. They're good at what they do. Very seldom met men like that. Now, supposing you took a couple with marriage problems, and instead of going to Bill and Andrew, they went to some... Is there a denomination that appoints guys elders at age 19? And they go to a kid who's age 19. Or they go to some priest who's been put in there at age 24. And let's just suppose he's lecherous. And he's lusting after the wife while he's talking to them. I mean, what a mess you would have, right? Or supposing a song leader was illiterate, and so he's having to stop and ask everybody. I mean, you can think of your own examples. The church is designed to function correctly. And whenever you have a reasonable amount of good faith, where people are trying, at least with a decent amount of sincerity, to do it God's way, it's a beautiful thing. That's his point in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 27 through 31. Questions or comments on that so far? So he says, he set some in the church, first apostles, and secondarily prophets, and thirdly teachers, and after that miracles. Were there more apostles or prophets? Were there more prophets or teachers? There's 12 basic apostles, and then a few others added in the book of Acts. But prophets, there were several in various different cities, more prophets. And of course, teachers would be anybody imparting the word. How many teeth do you have? Versus how many eyes? Well, what if you reversed it? You know, I go for two teeth. One big one on top, one big one on the bottom, 32 eyes, kind of like a spider has or something like that. It'd be weird. Supposing you had 32 elders and two teachers and one new convert. God's put them all in the ways that they need to go. So are all apostles or are all prophets? are all teachers or are all work. By the way, it says you have miracles and gifts of healings and helps and governments. What is a help in this sense? Does Numeric and Standard have a different word for that? Anybody have? God's put all these different things in the the King James says helps. It comes from a word that's a little different for what we're doing. Anybody have that in Numeric and Standard? Still says helps. Yeah, help is the ability to do something for somebody. It's anything where you are providing something for an individual that they wouldn't be able to provide for themselves. Does everybody have the gift of helping? Ed, comment?
Yeah, I think they do, but I just thought it was interesting that teachers were ahead of them performing miracles and gifts of healing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hierarchy.
Right, if it's a hierarchy, yeah.
First, second, third, to me that's a hierarchy.
Thirdly, teachers, yeah, and after that he does say that. So imparting this knowledge is critical, right, Mike?
I think it's easy to blur a line here that we, in my understanding, need to keep clear. Paul is talking about things in which God has directly intervened to bestow these gifts, and then sometimes we can blur this line as to somebody has a propensity towards some talent, and then we call that a gift, and in a sense it is. But that's not what Paul's talking about here. He's talking about things that God has specifically given.
Yep.
So when you say, do we all have a gift of helping, we might have a propensity or a capacity to help in some form or another, but I think this was something a little distinct.
Yeah, probably. And the basic idea of a helping is that I need something and you can give it to me. Let's supposing that I've got a problem relating to John, just say, which I don't. Who here is going to help me with that? Who can minister to me with wise family counsel? Have you ever seen it? Put it this way. God says some people in the church have helps. This particular kind of helps. Have you ever seen a kind of person who is eager to help, who wanted to be involved, who wanted to be engaged, and you kind of wish they weren't? The person shows up at your house, and they come on in, and they say, now I want to tell you about John, Jeff, and he starts coaching you, and you almost have a guilty conscience because you're glad when the guy leaves. Have you ever seen somebody who's more eager to help than able to help?
Yes.
You know, it seems like most big churches you run into, there's one or two people who want to be the counselor or want to be something, and they don't really have the ability, and they mean absolutely great, but they don't have the ability. Bear in mind that only some people have been ordained by God to do any particular help. And so, how do you handle a situation like that? Well, hopefully you have Bill and Andrew or something or somebody who can gently go to the guy and say, you know what your best role is, brother? And hopefully that brother will listen, right? You know, you're most helpful doing this. Would you mind focusing on that? Would there be any better way than for a guy to be alert to what his brethren are telling him? So the diversities of tongues are a better thing. They're totally hung up on this tongues thing because it's a glorious thing. They've got an audience and it's spectacular, and I stand up and I speak in Chinese, and here's two Chinese people back there, and they go, wow, perfect Mandarin, Jeff, unbelievable. And I take a bow left and a bow right, and now somebody else is fighting to get on stage. Why is it that some Christians like to perform with an audience? If you take Jeff Clark, and he singles out those things to do where people will see him doing it. What's the basic problem that you've got? Are there things, put it this way, are there things you can do in Jesus Christ that don't draw an audience? Are there jobs to do where people aren't going to know you're doing it? Yeah, you could pick those. So why do some people always want the audience? Ed, comment?
Yeah, I think they want it because it's a positive stroke, so it makes them feel good, it makes them feel better. But I was just thinking about the passages in the Sermon on the Mount where, like, you have the, you have the one that's doing their alms to be seen of men, and they're praying to be, and they're fasting, not just one day.
To be seen by men.
One day a week they're fasting, and then they're just making their faces look a little more fasting. And so when Jesus says, they have their glory, but I tell you, and then so basically their glory is right there, then and there for the people they think they're very religious, pious guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their glory, but their glory is not with God. And he even does it for the prayers where he says, they're in the streets. And I've seen this, by the way, in the Church of Christ, especially. We haven't had any meetings lately, but a lot of times when you have a gospel meeting and you have visitors, you have preachers visiting other congregations, and they ask a preacher, oh, can you do the prayer? I've seen this where it goes, you know, this eloquent 15-minute prayer that gets into 75-cent words that none of us understand those words, but they sounded very academic or whatever. And I'm like, who's getting the glory? I mean, what's he praying about? And so there's this kind of thing, who's getting the glory? He's getting the glory right there, but is it really?
There are lots of ways to show off. I like that verse you quoted, to be seen by men, right? And when we're doing that, we're being immature. Tanya? Yeah, the glory goes to them when the glory should be going.
They're constantly reminding you of whatever background they might have. It's all me. And even at social functions, you find that, and you're just like, wait a minute, what are we supposed to be doing here?
Mm-hmm.
They're not putting the emphasis on themselves, and they're not constantly saying, well, I've got this college background or that or this, and you know, look at me. And those preachers, you get the, at least for me, the ones that put the emphasis on God, help me the most, because I can look past them, because they're not irritating me with their egotistical attitude, and then I can see what their lesson really is about.
Right. Me too.
Right. I can still admire that person, but I'm not worshiping that person.
Right. When Lowell or Dick or Paul or somebody of that nature preaches, I don't notice them. I notice the scriptures they're talking about. You know, and that's definitely what they're shooting for. Point we want to get at. Jenny, comment?
Mm-hmm.
It can be an age thing, no doubt. We're just about done with the chapter, but we wanted to leave by focusing on the main point here, which is these folks were competing for attention and praise. Now, as Jenny points out, we all want some praise. We all want to be appreciated. We all want to be accepted. So what's the key here? We all want some appreciation. So what is the key to not getting to where we want to do it in front of an audience all the time? And you go to all the Proverbs, chapters 1 through 31, let another's mouth praise thee and not thine own, this kind of idea. There is plenty of appreciation and praise to be had naturally in daily life without hunting it down and wallowing in it. That's the basic idea. How come Joshua and Caleb didn't take a multivitamin? Because they got it naturally from the food they ate. If you look around and you're sensitive and you're listening, there are a lot of people who appreciate you and love you. And rather than eating the frosting off the donut by focusing on praise of men, just taking the natural warmth that comes to us in daily life is the thing to focus on, isn't it? As opposed to needing to be up front or needing to be on the website or whatever it might be. That becomes an immaturity thing. Mike, did you have a comment I saw?
Well, the flip side of that is that we all have a responsibility to look at the things that people are doing.
Yes.
And to appreciate them.
Yeah. Have we been appreciating the stuff you're doing? Or probably not, right? Because Putterball's working hard on a day-after-day basis. No, that's true. Yeah, and did Paul, for example, spend a lot of time saying, love what you're doing. Love what you're doing. Love what you're doing. Paul did that all the time. And don't you like being around people who make it a point of doing that? Absolutely. Matter of fact, I won't go into it, but we looked up attention-seeking categories, and they had a bunch of them on the internet. There's the drama queen. There is the bully. There is the victim. There is the quiet sufferer. And I mean, you can go through all... Do you like being around drama queens who always want attention and they're there? What we want is people who are mature enough to take their attention as it comes naturally in daily life is the point. So another form of that is the preacher who's all egoed out. Joe? Yeah.
The children are miserable, the wife is miserable. You know, sometimes with the children, I know it can be the child's fault, but, you know, when the family does not have any respect for, it really shows you a lot more than what they present to you in that couple hours down here at the building.
Matthew 23, just before Jesus was crucified, when he gave the seven woes to the Pharisees, the idea of the person who was like the whited sepulcher, they appeared to men to be very religious, and then those who knew him best. Yeah. So, Bill, and then I want one more thing here before we close the chapter, but go ahead, Bill. Go ahead.
There is a hierarchy here, and we have to do it from God's perspective. Verse 31 says, the desire for earnestness will be greater than it.
Mm-hmm.
There are gifts that are great.
Yeah.
The ones that seem greater are the miracles and the tongues that are flashy and loud and out there. But what do you think about it? Tongues and miracles are there to support the greater gifts, which were the teaching and prophecy. God wants the knowledge imparted and all that about God, of all those important things. So there is that balance. So he gave more flash to the miracles and, you know, the healing. Whoa, look at that. And because it wasn't as great as the prophecy, which was imparting God's, you know, will from heaven.
That was actually the last point we wanted, so thanks. Yeah. Right, so absolutely. Covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet the whole point of these gifts was what he's going to talk about in chapter 13. I show you a more excellent way. It isn't these church processes that matter. It's what these church processes are designed to do. What's this class designed to do? It's designed to, for us to draw closer to God, understand how to walk our Christian walk better. Supposing you could take a pill and stay home and do it twice as good, then we wouldn't even have this class. We're not here for the class as a means to itself. We're not just here to get better at doing Wednesday night. We're here trying to draw closer to God. That's the point. And that's what he's going to talk about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I'm going to show you a better way. Supposing I could do all that. Supposing I had every miracle. Supposing I knew every mystery. Supposing I gave all my goods to the poor, and suppose I gave myself to be burnt, but it wasn't for love, I'd be worth zero. So let's not get the cart before the horse. Let's go down to what we're doing all this for and do that. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, and this circumstance in Corinth was a perfect example of when the system of gifts becomes overripe. These individuals are exemplifying these gifts, and then they're taking the glory for themselves. And it's a system that tends toward that. And that's why Paul says here, now, we've seen the outcome of this system of gifts and what it does. Let's look at this more excellent way, which is going to see what it is. And as he later writes to the Colossians and others, that through these kinds of things, the church is knit together in love. And
yes,
that's the more perfect way.
All right. I think we've covered 1 Corinthians chapter...